Welcome to the IRIS podcast. You're listening to a talk as part of the Contemporary Issues in Child Protection seminar series organised by the Scottish Child Care and Protection Network. This talk was recorded on the 23rd of May 2011. Dave Moran, working with men who are violent in relationships.
Thank you, folks. It's quite daunting given the kind of experience that's around the room. They say that an expert is somebody who comes from far away with a PowerPoint presentation, so I've just come from next door, so that's basically, I'm just here to share my experience with you. I think I probably want to say just a couple of things in relation to people waiting for Caledonian to come along, because I have a close relationship with all the people who are involved in Caledonian, and basically it's probably the kind of flagship programme or system that's operating in the UK. But I think probably one of the issues that it means for social workers in day-to-day practice is, well, we need to wait for Caledonian to come along and we don't all fulfil the criteria. And currently, I think there are four areas that basically are developing the pilot, and I think that's to move on to six quite shortly. But the issue for most of us in our day-to-day practice is that we don't have that at our fingertips. In England and Wales, there are actually 36 projects that operate within the non-statutory sector. But in Scotland, for very good reasons, really, we have gone down the statutory road, first of all. I was involved from the beginning of... Somebody's still running the change programme. I'm interested to hear that you're still doing that, because I was involved in obviously setting the change programme up. And when we did that, it was quite clear. The message to us was politically very strong, that we had to work with men within the, basically within a criminal justice context because of the criminal nature of violence. And of course, we weren't very long into that before we realised that this essentially meant that we were excluding a lot of men. But it was important at that time to go down the criminal justice road, which we've done very well in Scotland, but in comparison to England and Wales, where there's been a variety of pathways into this work, I think we've still got a lot to develop. And I'd like to share some of my thoughts with you about that after the break. Caledonian is both a programme, a group work programme for working with men who have been mandated to attend. But it is also much more than that. It also is basically a programme which exists for women and a separate one for children, and it basically suggests a multi-systemic approach, which involves a variety of partnerships, involves a variety of memoranda of understanding between police, prosecutors, social workers. So it's very, very high power. But I want to begin by saying, well, who are the men that we are going to deal with? When I started doing the work in 1989 with Change, we developed a model of working with men, which was originally devised in, suitably enough, in the eve of Bob Dylan's 70th birthday. This programme was devised in Duluth, Minnesota. Some of you have heard of the Duluth programme. And that simply was a set of principles and an ideology, really, of working with men. It was based on a feminist understanding of why men were violent in relationships. And it supposed, essentially, that men's main purpose, basically, for being violent was that they had a message that was fed to them through patriarchy, through society, about being powerful and being controlling. So it presupposed a particular model that we understood that basically applied to most of the men that we were working with, and this is called the power and control theory, which I can highlight on a slide later on if people are looking for that. So my first question is, who are the men that we're actually working with? And this is, I think, an important question if we are trying particularly to engage with men who haven't been mandated, who haven't been sent. But whether they've been sent by courts or whether they're not, I think one of the first things that we need to know is that we're dealing with a very ambivalent group of individuals. Men are very ambivalent about their use of violence. before coming into Change, I worked in a prison, a men's prison, and it was a fairly low security prison, basically, because it's a Category C. Most of the men would have been deemed really to have been a nuisance, frankly. They created difficulties in the lives of other people, and there were difficulties in their own lives, and most of them were in serving very short sentences, some for unpaid fines and so forth. And what became apparent to me was the fact that the issue of violence against women was a kind of no-no. You know, it was just a non-issue in the prison. None of the men could possibly countenance that anybody would be violent and abusive against partners. It was just something that was hidden. But, of course, as a social worker in the prison, I had access to records, and it was immediately apparent the extent to which, basically, men were actually abusive and violent. And at the time I worked there, going back quite a number of years, they introduced telephones into the prison, because prior to that, it was men communicated only by letter, which was screened, of course, by the prison officers. And in the rec in the evening, I used to work every Wednesday evening in the prison, and you would overhear the conversations that men were having with their wives and their girlfriends and their partners. And what it really was about was the extent to which men started to use the telephones, basically, to exercise control over their partners. And the request for visits, for the social worker to sort problems out, to bring in wives, to basically put wives in their place, was something that was, you know, the referral rate from men stepped up hugely. And the other thing was that basically the other group of men that ran the prison basically condoned this completely. And that was seen as my job, to sort out this stuff. So in an institution that basically, ostensibly, where there was a kind of, you know, to be violent, it was beneath contempt. In fact, the whole institution basically ran on the patrolling, the controlling of women. And that basically, I think, wakened me up to something that I hadn't been alert to in my professional life, and ultimately brought me into this work. So men are ambivalent about their use of violence. On the one hand, basically, they will condemn it, but on the other hand, they will say that in any given circumstances, any man would probably do the same thing. And that, I think, is quite often what we're dealing with when the man comes into the room and engages with us. So he may also be violent, he may also be angry, and he may feel justified. And he may well then look to us to entertain that justification or to endorse that in some way. So I think almost all my experience, I worked with men directly in this work for 8 years, has been that basically the man seeks to engage with you to buy into part of his story. He may indeed feel guilty, but the guilt may be hidden, and he may choose basically to disguise the guilt with a lot of anger or a lot of bluster. The other thing is that what we know about men who are violent and abusive in the relationships is that they isolate partners, they isolate the relationship. The violence is more, or the abuse basically is facilitated because of the fact that because for a lot of the time it's kept private, or at least it's hidden. Or he invests a lot of energy in trying to hide it. So he's very fearful of that being exposed. So I think, in my experience, and your experience may be different, but my experience suggests that basically the men that we're dealing with are frightened men. They're fearful as well as frightening men. And I think fear, for me, the man's fear is something that I certainly would basically say plays a large part in what this man's behaviour is about. So he's probably resistant to being engaged. So we're dealing with resistance from the get-go. And this then creates the tension that's around about how we actually engage with men. And I think probably around the issue of motivation is something I want to talk about later. I also I like to think this idea might be true, but I can't prove it. But certainly I've found it a useful technique. I have worked with a number of men, and I think they're confused about their behaviour. Now, they're not all by any manner of means. Some men are perfectly clear about what it is they're doing. Some men are clearly quite purposeful and quite intentional. But many men, particularly at the point that we engage with them, have got quite a premium in presenting the behaviour to you as something that they don't understand. It's as though the mood or the anger or the black rage or whatever just somehow takes over. And they basically are the victim of this behaviour that they don't understand. Now, that may or may not be true. In some instances, I think psychologists do tell us that people can enter a sphere of anger or rage where they don't really know whether they're happening. But I think that can be disproved in probably most instances. But I found it a useful purchasing tool to engage with men to say, I think you don't understand what this is about, so I'm here to try and go this journey with you so that we can try and give you some understanding about what that's about. So that would be my tip number one, or my hook number one is basically, if the man presents as being confused, I think it gives us purchase power to work with him on opening up what the confusion is about. I think also, and again, it's by no means universal, but I think a lot of men are scared about their own behaviour. Because if a man is confused, if he is at the mercy of rages, well, this will take anger out of the equation later on, because all the men don't have an anger problem. We're not dealing with anger, although we are in some instances, and it's useful to work in anger. But if the man is at the mercy of things that take over his life, a rage or whatever, or a set of circumstances over which he has no control, then basically that's a scary place to be. And I think also that can be a useful hook to work with a man to say, if this is the way your life is at the minute, then it must be a scary place that you are living in yourself. And again, I think that opens up the possibility of moving forward so that we can work with you to take you to a place where you're less scared about who you are, as well, of course, being less scary to other people. The other thing that I don't know whether people share the experience in the room, and if you're working with change, I'd like to speak to you during the break about this, but I was always keen when I was working with men who were resistant. They've got to come in and they've got to do this terrible group work programme, or they've got to deal with this social worker and see them every Tuesday afternoon or whatever, and they just want to get this problem sorted out. You know, they just want to get this issue of why, as adult men, they've learned to function in this way, basically, that is violent and they're controlling, and, you know, how many weeks will it take to get this sorted out? And we say, well, in actual fact, it takes the rest of your life. You know, it's basically a new way of learning to be, which I think is what it's about. So they're looking for a quick fix, and there is no quick fix. And that's, I think, one of the issues that probably is around, certainly for me, about some of the work I want to develop. Because we don't just learn a quick fix from seeing a social worker. We need to learn a quick fix by having other models out there that we engage with. And the other thing is that he probably wants you to agree with his story. That's probably pretty much what he's looking for. I was at a respect organisation meeting and down south last week, and they run a men's phone line down there where men phone up who basically want advice about their use of violence. And they've also got a helpline for men who are actually the victims of violence, which we can speak about later on. But the extent to which men phone up not to look for a solution to their problem, but just to be heard, and just to try and get that worker to agree with their version of events is actually sort of overwhelming. Mostly, though, despite the resistance that we can encounter, despite the fact that we're dealing with angry, resistant men who might want to walk out the door, I think every man that I've worked with knows deep down there's something wrong. So they're troubled as well as troubling. That, I think, probably is fairly common. So how do we engage with men? Much of the work at our early engagement, of course, is about motivation. And I think we have the skills as social workers to to be fairly quite powerful in motivating men. But we also basically need to realise that when we engage with men who are violent and abusive, who are quite misogynist, who are very often quite unpleasant in the way that they present, and we know, of course, about what their behaviour is about, because we shouldn't be doing this work unless we have some kind of system in place by which we're addressing the needs and the support issues of the woman has. So we need to be getting the information from other sources rather than the man. But that's, I think that's something for a discussion later on. But much of the work there is about motivation. If we get this wrong, then basically the man just simply resists. I once did some co-working with a woman worker who was very, very angry with a man that we were working with. And as he started to tell his story, of course, he told it in terms of justification and why he had done such and such and why she was terrible and how she had provoked him and so forth. And I could see the anger coming up in my co-worker, and basically what happened was challenged him straight there and then, and we you know, he just basically closed down the drawbridge. So I think probably one of the things I need to say is that when we do this work with men, it really impacts on us. I've carried out a piece of research looking at the impact of doing this work on us as men and women. And the sample of workers I interviewed said, well, it's unlike any other work I've ever done because it has resonances in my own life. I live in partnerships. I've got conflicts in partnerships. I see the conflicts that I have, the feelings I have amplified. So we, no matter how professional we are, we go into this work and it has resonances for us. So it's fairly crucial, I think, when we try and engage, that we realise that what we're trying to do is professionally motivate and engage with someone. The way I've found it useful, again, basically, is by playing on the fact that this man is likely to be quite self-interested. Dobash's latest later research around violent men suggested that men who are violent and abusive have a propensity to be egocentric. They're very concerned about themselves, and so I think it's useful, again, to use that as a hook to acknowledge what the consequences are for that man right now, and basically to see that the fact that he's behaving that way is an issue that actually affects him. Often it affects him as a father. You know, often that's the kind of issue, because the consequences for him are that his partner has left him or threatened to leave him. Of course, he has his own motivation that we can't work out the equation. He may want that partner back if she has left him, and we know that that partner will have left him for good reasons. So when we enter actually into doing the work, it's fraught with ethical issues because we're not there to try and teach that man new tricks so that his partner comes back to him. But he'll have his own agenda, and that may be sometimes what it's about, in which case the work that we do with him later on is possibly less to do with past use of violence than how he conducts himself in the present and the day-to-day. So there are consequences for him, and very often these are, of course, the immediate consequences of his relationship with his partner and especially with his children. So those of you who've done this work will know that men's children, if I'm talking about men, straight men possibly, who are fathers and so forth, that is a major motivator for them trying to do something about their behaviour. And I guess people will share this experience in the room that a lot of men will engage with you because they realise that they're actually becoming like their father was, which isn't to suggest an intergenerational transmission, but that's a major hook for men. The men may be in crisis. Very often they present and they are in crisis. So they're not at that point going to sit down and basically look at behaviour that is difficult and may be shaming. So what they need basically is you to be there to hear what that crisis is, to be clear that the crisis isn't about getting their kids back, but is basically to try and get some kind of stable opening there so that we can move on and engage with men. And he may also feel that he's out of control, that his life is out of control. Some of the men that we see at the point of entry, the point of engagement, are quite depressed. And depression, basically, very often in men, as we know, translates into acted out behaviour. So that he's possibly drinking quite a lot. He's maybe getting into arguments and fights and so forth. Or he's basically quite he's quite hyper in the way that he's behaving. So our task then really is to focus, I think, on the current choices that the man is able to make. And I think this is probably the area that I've learned crucially. It's then important, basically, to try and say that the man is where he is, and if he does approach us for help or advice, or if he does approach us because he's dealing with a problem, and the problem is the partner, of course we don't accept that necessarily, but we work on the, not the ambivalence, but we work on the, any chink of light that we can get through, basically, where the man accepts some responsibility. And we work with him on the fact that he realises that life can't go on the way it is just now, because it's very, very difficult, quite unbearable. But the thing that he can do is that he can begin from now, and he can actually begin to control some of this behaviour. So this is the message, basically, that we are going to work with him to try and help him understand this behaviour that he doesn't quite understand, so that things will start to get better for him. He's likely to be very apprehensive about our attitude and how we behave, whether we disapprove. In your handout, I think you have some messages from the 21st Century Review about the key practice skills. This is basically aimed at criminal justice social workers, but it applies to anyone really who is working in a kind of social work capacity about the skills and the values that we bring. And crucially, what that about is about the relationship that we establish with the men that we're working with. And the current debates that are around whether the work that we do with men is effective is less now concerned on what the programme looks like and what the elements of a particular programme are. And crucially, they've basically come back on the skills that we use to engage with men. So this simply, I think, probably echoes it. Many of the men that we deal with are fearful. They've isolated themselves. How we engage is vital in obtaining motivation. Of course, we emphasise the fact that we disapprove of the behaviour up until now, but we can approve of the fact that he's facing up to the need to change this by looking forward. A point about language. Apparently, men like to use language of problem solving. Apparently, men also don't particularly like to really be thinking in terms of problems, but tend to be thinking in terms of solutions, which again takes us down the theoretical road about whether we look to solutions that the man's been having. But I think it's quite important that what we try and do, and this is all, of course, this is a professional sleight of hand, if you like. It might not be true, but what we might want to do is approve of the fact that the man has the courage, shape up, or to face up to the fact that he realises that he's been engaging in this difficult and demanding and challenging and unpleasant, shaming, dangerous behaviour, but that we approve of the fact, basically, that the man has got the courage to come forward and do something about it. So again, the kind of motivational hook, I think, has to be language orientated. And so once we do that, then I think what we're concerned about is the notion of the kind of therapeutic alliance. What I did wrong when I worked in change, and I think what social workers need to think about when they engage with difficult, demanding behaviour is that, first of all, we had to learn the lesson of we want to challenge these men. Well, challenge is quite a man-like word as well. We want to challenge these men. We want to point out the kind of deficits in the way that they engage. We want not to listen to what these men say because the men will probably lie. And, of course, the research backs up the fact that men's stories are quite evasive. But one of the mistakes that I did, and I paid the price, was I spent probably about a year and a half trying to challenge all these men. And then I would go back into my private life, my own life, and I would try and think about why you know, why I was involved in this kind of different discourse and refusing to listen to what men were saying, and it really needed me to basically rethink. Not that basically you stop challenging some of the things that men are saying, but you need to, I think, basically get alongside them. Of course, men will realise that it's not just about physical violence, but some will present slightly puzzled that it is, that they're here because they have been violent. So we need quite quickly to establish the terrain that it's not just physical violence that we're actually talking about. That there is a definition that we used to use in Change, which simply says that physical violence is the use of physical force to intimidate and punish someone and get someone to do something against their will. And of course, we're working with the power and control diagram. It's basically a thematic picture which suggests that power and control really is the kind of issue, and there are a whole lot of tactics around psychological, sexual abuse, economic abuse, and that's really what we need to establish that we're there to look at. And some men get that, and some men basically have a big investment and say it's only physical, and I've stopped doing it, and I won't ever do it again. And the other thing that we know is that when men say, I won't ever do it again, it's one of the times when, as social workers, or speaking as a social worker, I don't necessarily believe what the client tells me. In next door, when we're training our students, we say, usually believe what the person tells you. And certainly when women are coming forward to talk about violence, we say, believe what the woman's telling you. This is a time when we don't necessarily believe what the man's telling us, but it might be useful to at least hear his story. So we need to hear his story. That's, I think, probably another thing. We need to be able to sit down and listen to the story that man tells, and when to challenge and what to challenge. And I haven't come in here this morning with the right answer, because we're all workers and we know when to challenge, and we know when to challenge, but sometimes in this area it's hard not to challenge, because the story that the man tells is such a difficult story to hear. So one of the ways that we need to basically listen to that story is to listen to the most recent example of violence or abuse. If the man is sent by the court, then that's usually why he's there. If he's not, we need to, at this early stage, listen to this man tell us why he has come to you. And we know how to do this, I think. We know, certainly, when we're breaking down a critical incident, we know how to do that. And if we don't, we need to also, at a fairly early stage, establish that there are victims. There's an effect that this man's behaviour has. Because for many men, when they engage with us, they don't actually notice that there is a victim. There is someone on the receiving end of the violence. They want to move from the past, when they used violence, very quickly into the future about how they can get it right and not do it again. That's the story they might want to tell you. So it's important, basically, not necessarily to shame the man, but it's important. We can't get that man to move forward and to start to change his behaviour unless at some point in the fairly early engagement we get the man to acknowledge that there are actually effects on other people. So there are consequences on his partner, consequences on his children. That, again, is an area where he is basically probably likely to open up and be quite vulnerable, and there are also consequences for himself. An awful lot of men that we're dealing with, the fact that they are abusive takes an incredible toll on themselves, both physically and mentally, and in terms of self-harm, in terms of the emotions that they carry around with them that don't acknowledge. So there are major problems for themselves. The other thing that I want to just highlight is that there are gains and losses of using violence. The man will probably tell us a story that there's no outcome, he hasn't gained anything by this, he's completely lost. But of course there are, he's gained. When he's used violence or when he's been abusive, there are gains in there for him, or he wouldn't be doing it. And the gain is the control, the gain is getting somebody to be quiet when he wants them to be quiet, the gain is basically the service, the authority that he wants. So there are gains and losses. So we need to work with them on the basis that the losses outweigh the gains. The gains are usually momentary or short-term. We can talk about the pattern of violence if we want, because the man might be able to see no pattern to his behaviour at all, but we should be able to do that. We should be able to know that there is a kind of almost a kind of logic to times when he's been violent and abusive, and to be able to track that using methods that as social workers we all know. You know, the who, the what, the when, the where, the why, the triggers, basically, setting the violence in context. And we've got the skills as social workers and as support workers and so forth as to be able to work with that. If he doesn't see the violence, then other people might. And has he said that it'll never happen again? So if he tells us, as many men do, this isn't going to happen again, well, we'd basically say, have you ever said that before? And the chances are he has. And if it has, then why has it? You know, why has it been violent? I think that it's one of the things that has made sense to me increasingly, and it's now around in the literature about how we engage with men, comes from narrative theory, developed in Australia, used quite widely over there, creeping its way into, I think, probably some children and families work probably over here, much less settled, a bit dodgy about narrative theory. But what narrative theory does basically is objective. If I am an actor of shameful behaviour, it's helpful for me to externalise that behaviour and see that as the problem that needs to be dealt with rather than me. So I think it's useful to work with the man and say, well, what is the problem that you're dealing with? And he's going to say, well, the problem's her. The problem is her. And when I worked in the group with men, almost every man would basically turn. If they were straight men and they were living with a female partner, almost all of them would turn around and say, you don't understand what I've got to put up with. You just don't understand what she's like to live with. And one of the issues is we don't collude. So, I mean, that's a whole issue in itself. How will we not collude? But in order to get through this tricky bit, I would say, no, I understand what you're telling me, because I sometimes feel that about the person I live with as well. And once I used that, then that kind of allowed me not to collude with the men, but simply to say, I understand what you are telling me, and I think lots of people think that about their partners. But what's happened here is that basically you've thought that to such an extent that you've been violent in the past. So he may think, basically, that the partner or the life is the problem. I think it's helpful to say, the fact is that you've grown up with these messages about what it's like to be a man, what it's about to be in control. That's the problem that we need to work on. It's the attitudes and the beliefs. So there's a checklist there, a tool rather, that we can use, which is basically about, let's look at the things you've done in the past. And there are some checklists basically that you're hand out. We're dealing with a man who might not want to tell the story, but who's ambivalent, but he's actually, I'm operating on the assumption that the man may have come to us and we're engaging with him. So it can be very, very difficult to get in there. But I'm kind of, in order to make life easy for me on a Monday morning, I've spent the weekend envisaging that this man might actually be sitting in front of me and that I might have some kind of way to negotiate his way in. So I've made it easy for myself, but use this as the harder example. Deal with this, which takes us around still on the story bit, and then I'll probably bring us one step back. Because this question of establishing the other me is, again, it's a useful motivational tool. For those of you who'll do the Caledonian training, which you'll do probably with Rory McCrae and Moira Andrew, speak to Rory about personal constructs, because he's done some very interesting work on the notion of trying to engage with a man because this is what his life is like at the minute, and trying to establish what it might look like if other things were better. And other things being better doesn't mean that his wife will do what he tells him to do. It means there's a different vision for basically how he might live. So it's basically about how is the problem got me to where I am now and who I am. You know, how has the way that I've grown up, the way that I've thought, the way that I've conducted my relationships, why has it got me into this situation that I'm in now? What would I be if I were able to move beyond this? Because what I think is that in Scotland we haven't really done very much in moving this work forward, but when we actually look to where they have moved work forward, but working with men that don't come through courts, what they do is basically they work in this material a lot of the time, and they're also looking for other men that act there as sponsors or as mentors or as role models. What might the other me look like? So Caledonian use what they call a self-characterisation and basically what I would call just a letter about themselves. So that's one of the tools that they might actually use, where the man basically, or we can do it in an interactional way, about the man trying to present a picture or a bit of himself about how he might like to be otherwise. Now, the other thing I'm thinking is that if you're working primarily with children and families, this is sometimes where children and family workers start to get angry. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to engage sympathetically, to engage with men who are difficult to engage with. That's essentially what we're trying to do. We know that he's done difficult, dangerous, unpleasant things, but we're trying to engage with somebody who does that to get him to stop doing it. So that's what the tool might look like, is to establish that there is a possibility of behaving otherwise. But to move forward, because I've taken more time than I intend, but I'll just carry on to finish saying what I want to say. This is what I think is probably a piece of dialogue that might actually come in fairly early before we get to the man envisioning this wonderful good life or whatever that he may live, although that's a fabulous bit of work, the good life that's in your handouts there. And I certainly would always say that it's a useful tool, which is to say with the man, look, the way that you've been behaving, it sounds as though life is difficult for you and you've made life difficult for other people. So before we actually do any more with you, we've got to work with you to learn how you can make yourself safe. And we've got to basically look at how you have used violence in the past so that you can establish some sort of safety plan. And this is a safety plan that you create for yourself. And again, it's a kind of cognitive behavioural tool. And essentially, it's about using maybe perhaps a diary to work with the man on his emotions. Because, as we know, a lot of the men are emotionally closed down. They just don't know how they tick. So I like to use language, but what makes me tick? How many times a day, what kind of situations irritate you? Of course, it's not all about anger management, but it is about understanding moods, understanding what's going on in his life. So I think in your handout there, what kind of situations that you get worked up about? I don't get worked up about anything, I'm dead cool. Well, no, you're not, I'm sorry, you know, because in the course of any day, things are going to be happening all the time. Working on these kind of issues around the triggers about what kind of physical situations do you get, you know, happen to you when you're starting to get worked up. So really starting to probably do some fairly early stuff with that man, simply to realise that he is a set of emotions and that these emotions basically cause him and other people difficulty. Self-talk is another very powerful tool, is the negative script that basically makes you angry, makes you feel crap, makes you feel defeated, makes you feel that you want to get your own back against the world. That's in the handout there for you. And then making myself safe. Well, one of the, again, it's a tool that is only as safe as the man wants to be. This is the other issue, which is why our work basically has got to be prefaced and prioritised in terms of the safety of children. There are two goals that we have when we're doing this work. My goal, and the thing that motivates me to do the work, is that I believe people can change. I believe difficult, dangerous people can change. But that doesn't happen a lot of the time, and sometimes it won't happen at all. So the overriding goal when we do this work then has to be about the safety of the other people that are involved. I think basically that we can change men. I'm interested in the theory and the practice, how we do that, but our goal, first of all, has to be about the safety of the other people. So one of the tools that we used to use and is still used in every program is basically to try and to work with man to get that man to learn when to take a time out, simply to exit from a situation. And in the 7 years I actually did work with men, there was always this thing that I had that I thought, this doesn't really work. But when we interviewed men and when researchers interview men, basically, it's one of the things that men learn, what Edward Gondolf calls interruptive techniques. And people use it not just to stop themselves escalating to a domestic situation, but in a whole variety. It's a situational trigger tool that men exit when they see that they're about to become dangerous. Come back to that later on. So, last two slides. This is the difficult and demanding thing that we are trying to do with men. We know that in order for the men to change, there needs to be a fundamental shift in the way that they view themselves in the world. And really what that comes down from is the most men will present, as I say, as victims. Very often they present as victims of the abuse. You know, I behaved like that in exceptional circumstances because the hell that I'm having to put up with. Most men will walk through the door and present themselves as victims. So we have to change that narrative, first of all. And sometimes we can do that very quickly, or sometimes that's the work that we actually have to do. But we're working with that man so that he replaces the locus of control. So that he doesn't get up in the morning and a mood comes through the door, an angry mood comes through the door and sat on his shoulder. That's what men sometimes say. We need to get them to move away from being a victim of external circumstances. Somebody who basically does feel that way, who feels that they've got it, somebody who's acted upon by the world, so that she made me do it. She made me do it as basically, she provoked me. It's usually the dialogue that we're engaging in. And only other people can make me feel better about myself. So the work there, and we don't do it in the first week, but basically it's about how do men learn to, what they call, nurture themselves. How do we self-nurture? How do we actually start to feel better about themselves? And we do that because all the work, really, that we're doing with men is underpinned by the fact that the man has to take some responsibility. And until he takes responsibility, he's not going to stop doing what he's doing. It might modify the violent behaviour. Men can modify their violent behaviour very quickly because they've been hiding it for years. But, of course, they can turn to a whole lot of other abusive behaviours. So they need to accept responsibility and they've got choice. And once they respect that, basically, they've established a bridgehead, if you like, between themselves and the fact that they're going to be violent. That's usually what we're trying to do early stage. Get that, making themselves safe, establish that bridgehead. And then, once they start to take some control of themselves, they relinquish.
This recording is copyright of Iris 2011. It may be reused in the terms of Creative Commons licenses, attribution, non-commercial, share-alike 2.5, UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.